Owning a boat comes with a number of perks, like being able to fling your favorite fishing rod around. And here's another perk. GEICO's boat insurance covers your boat and your belongings. And with specialist support from agents that are as passionate about boating as you are, there's so much value that you'll want to high-five someone. But not while you're holding your fishing rod. That's a prized possession. So hold on tight with both hands and keep it covered through boat insurance. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.
This is Good Together, the podcast that inspires you to create change in the world every day. Keep listening for actionable tips and tricks to incorporate eco-friendly practices into your daily life.
We've been featured by Apple as the number one podcast for conscious consumers, and we can't wait to welcome you into our community of changemakers. I'm Lisa.
And I'm Laura. We're the founders of Brightly.eco, the new platform for conscious consumers. We believe in supporting all creatures, great and small.
And our team of experts show you how to live and shop responsibly by sharing world-changing lifestyle ideas, products, and more. To read show notes from Good Together and to browse all of the planet-friendly goodness that we feature, head to brightly.eco/podcast.
And to help spread the word about the podcast, tap on this episode and share Good Together with your friends and family. A simple text message helps us grow and create change around the world. Takeout sales at an all-time high as a result of the global COVID-19 pandemic, sustainable packaging is more important than ever. As sales rise, so do concerns about the environmental toll of all that extra packaging waste being sent straight to landfills, which are already almost at full capacity. In this episode, I speak with Lauren Olson, the Zero Waste Manager at WorldCentric, an eco-friendly packaging company, about how businesses are creating eco-friendly solutions to the packaging problem, how you as a consumer can be aware of certain packaging materials to either avoid or look for, and tips for reducing your overall plastic packaging consumption. Hi, Good Together listeners. We're so excited to have you listen today all about the dirt on sustainable takeout. So this is a really interesting topic. And the reason why we chose to talk to today's guest about it is because more people than ever are ordering takeout during the pandemic. And that's really raising concerns of the environmental toll of all of this extra packaging waste that's being generated and sent to the landfill. So on today's episode of Good Together, we're excited to welcome Lauren Olson, the Zero Waste Manager at WorldCentric. Lauren holds a master's degree in community sustainability, and she specializes in, her degree specializes in decision-making about waste. She also has a Bachelor of Science degree in environmental economics, and both of those are coming from Michigan State University. So welcome, Lauren. We're so glad to have you.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So this question, I think, was one that's all on our minds, right? Like we, you know, because of the pandemic, have been forced to change a lot of our daily behaviors, one of which is, you know, going out to restaurants. And of course, things are kind of ebbing and flowing with the way the pandemic is sort of rising and coming down. But in general, I would say, you know, before the pandemic, many businesses were shifting to more eco-friendly practices. And now we kind of feel like, you know, it's potentially taken some steps back in the name of safety. But before we get into that, I wonder if you can just kind of introduce yourself and your company, and then we can get into it.
Sure. Yeah. So as you mentioned, my name is Lauren Olson. I'm the Zero Waste Manager at Worldcentric. And we are pretty much the only company that only makes compostable food service ware, meaning we make takeout packaging, but we don't use any petroleum plastics, styrofoam, expanded polystyrene, is a technical term there. So none of that stuff that you might think of when it comes to plastic pollution. And we focus on items that are compostable in commercial composting environments. So that means facilities that are designed to compost things more than just your backyard composting operation.
Yeah. And I'm glad that you make that distinction, because it's one that we hear our audience is kind of frequently confused about, where you read on the label, something says compostable, and, you know, people think, oh, I can just kind of go out and drop it in my backyard compost heap. So I'm glad that you make that distinction for the audience, because most of the time, you know, when you're seeing packaging like this, you just want to check to make sure what that's rated for. And I would imagine, this is just a guess, and maybe you can help me with, would you say that most quote unquote compostable packaging being produced by companies like yours is most of the time limited to those more commercial facilities?
I would say for the most part, yes.
Yeah.
If it's not, it would say home compostable on the item.
Okay.
We do have like our plastic, they're bioplastic, food scrap bags and things like that, that are home compostable. And so those are certified as such, and that's a different testing process than the commercial composting. And that's not to say that home composters couldn't compost our products, but I would say the normal home composter, even myself, just doesn't have that good of a composting system in order to do it. It's
yep.
really best if you have, you know, someone who's like, it's their job to
exactly.
compost these items, and they know the science of it and went to school for it. And as opposed to us just trying to, you know, live our busy daily lives and having so many things to worry about, you just might not have that great of a composting system in order to break that stuff down effectively.
Exactly. That makes total sense. So yeah, as a consumer, sounds like we should be just on the lookout for the label that says home composting, if that's something that you're interested in. Otherwise, you can dispose of these containers and dispose of these packaging materials in containers that are designated for this type of, this type of packaging. And, you know, I would imagine, you know, the restaurants that have them typically will collect them. And then, you know, some places have compost bins that are curbside. And actually, that's another question I had for you, which is, you know, if you're in a community, for instance, I live in the city of Seattle, who does have compost bins available for waste management. Would you classify that as a place where I could put it in, right? Is that like the quote unquote commercial composting route? Would that work in some cases?
Yeah. So in some cases, like probably in your area, you're able to compost a whole slew of compostable products in addition to your food scraps and food waste. But in a lot of places, you're not able to do that.
Yep.
And there's quite a few reasons for that. You know, some composters are afraid of inviting compostable products into their mix because they're afraid of contamination, just because consumers are not very good sometimes at differentiating products.
Yep.
And if they get plastic, or just if people start thinking they can put all sorts of different stuff in there, like glass,
yeah,
then, you know, their compost can get kind of ruined. And that's a big issue, obviously, because then they don't have the feedstock to make their stuff, or they have to destroy entire loads. So,
oh, wow.
You know, that can be an issue for sure. Another issue is that, unfortunately, USDA does not allow compostable products to be put into compost that are certified organic.
Okay.
And I think this is pretty silly, because,
yeah.
you know, when you think about the food that we eat, a lot of it is just so modified. Maybe not you and I, but other people, of course. you know,
we all like do. We all do.
Corn syrup, you know, the dyes and stuff like that. We never eat any of that. You know,
no Doritos for me. No,
oh, never. not even during the height of the pandemic. We really, really need that junk food.
That's right.
Didn't touch it at all. So you know, that sort of stuff is just so. You know, what they consider synthetic, which is meaning it's made in a lab, like mm-hmm. how bioplastic is fermented corn that goes through several different laboratory processes to come from the corn in order to turn into bioplastic. You know, so I just disagree with their sort of way that they've interpreted that. But so it goes, it's been very difficult to change. So that's another reason why composters might not accept it.
That's so interesting. And so one thing that we tell our audience to do, whether you're recycling, composting, even throwing away trash, is make sure that you're referencing the materials that your waste management service sent you, right? So a lot of times nowadays they stick it on the can directly, which is super helpful, but you will also get some materials from them when you sign up for service. If you've lost those, as we do sometimes, you can also just call them up or go on their website to see. But you're right. I think it really does vary by sort of region. One thing that you said that I find really interesting, and it didn't even occur to me, is that the compost facilities themselves can have a little bit of a fear, right? They don't want this cross-contamination. And I think we have so many improvements that need to be made in the system in general. But it is difficult for consumers to figure out what goes where. I think it's difficult for consumers to also understand like greenwashing and whether or not something actually is eco-friendly. You know, I actually am expecting my first child, which I'm super excited about, but I kind of went down this rabbit hole with diapers. And, you know, I'm going to give reusable diapers a chance, cloth diapers, if you will. But I also was curious about like what makes up an eco-friendly diaper. And there's such a rabbit hole there around companies pretending to be compostable and not. So suffice it to say, I would say that, you know, this is an issue that is difficult. So when we think about coming back to the problem at hand from a consumer perspective, and kind of getting back to one of the original reasons we wanted to chat with you was about waste with takeout. I think it's really interesting for us to discuss the, you know, the business side of things, right? So I wonder, Lauren, if you had any sort of thoughts on how businesses maybe were attempting to possibly move to different, you know, plastic waste reduction methods within their restaurants before the pandemic. And then if you like feel like the pandemic has actually altered it, you know, like are people just saying, no, let's go back to the old plastic because it's cheaper. I'm curious to know kind of what your thoughts are there.
Yeah, you know, it's hard to say because I'm not like boots on the ground sales for World Centric, but you know, I do get a lot of feedback from different salespeople in our company, as well as like you. I just am too noticing of all these different things mm-hmm. going on, and I think the pandemic really did hurt the smaller restaurants. And you probably saw this around you too. It's just that, you know, they're really struggling. And in some ways I saw them move, like this one particular restaurant that I often visit, they moved from compostable to styrofoam. And I asked why, and they said it was a cost thing because they've just been, they're hurting so much. And that's where ordinances can be really nice. We have quite a few local ordinances in California.
Yep.
But really, they're all over the country that ban styrofoam, for example, or expanded polystyrene. So there's over 200 different ordinances across the country banning this. And I think that's a great step because then it puts it more at a level playing field for all the different restaurants involved. So it's not just like, well, why should I take this on when no one else is? And, you know, kind of get this existential crisis of what's the point, you know, and I'm already feeling such strain. So that's where I really feel as though the power of the local ordinance is really great. And then we've seen other states too, like most recently, Virginia has moved to ban styrofoam across the entire state.
Yeah, that's so, I mean, it's so powerful because we talk a lot about the, you know, intersection between consumer behavior, business behavior, and government behavior to really create change at scale. And I think when you talk about the ordinances and leveling the playing field, it's such an interesting perspective, right? Because you're totally correct. If all the businesses are required to operate on the same level, then it no longer becomes an option to really cut costs in that way, right? They can't, you know, rely on that particular lever to help their business or, you know, however they see it. So that's really interesting. And to me is a very actionable thing that people can do, right? If you see an ordinance around waste or around materials, the banning of such things in your region on your ballot, you can actually feel confident that if something like that passes, it's going to make a demonstrable difference, maybe even more so than like the abstract of voting for a politician who quote unquote says they're serious about climate change, right? It's a little bit more specific and actionable. So that's great.
Yeah. And a lot of times too, these ordinances are just done at the city, township, municipality, you know, level, county. So you can just contact those people and be like, hey, I support this. And, you know, they're going, it's a lot happening nationwide.
Yeah.
But, you know, with the pandemic too, we also did see a rise in wrapped. People wanted maybe like wrapped cutlery. Yep. You know, there was for a while, you couldn't bring your own reusable bags into grocery stores. Yep. So some plastic bag bans were being pushed back or not even enforced because of the fear of contamination on surfaces. I feel like that's kind of waned.
Yep.
I follow that tangentially. I mean, WorldCentric does not make replacement biodegradable plastic bags because we just don't really support that whole industry because it's so easy to just bring a reusable bag.
Yep.
But, you know, it's just interesting that, you know, there was such fear of surface contamination that it really went to this more packaging wanting environment.
Yeah. And to me, the interesting thing about all of that, right, was a lot of it was just a lack of information. And I think that's been another thing that's been, you know, a potential criticism of any government in the world, pick it with the way the pandemic's been handled. It's just because, sure, we were all kind of learning together, but there were some things where for a while, you're right, everybody was so worried about surface contamination. And then as it came out, well, actually, you know, it's most likely was not as big of a deal as was thought originally. So, you know, I think a lot of us were upset with, you know, chains like Starbucks that were saying, well, you couldn't bring your own reusable cup in. They've now allowed that back in some places. So I am glad to see that that's kind of healing, if you will. But yeah, in general, I was surprised by that too. Of course, while we were all in a state of, you know, uncertainty and worry, there were other things to worry about, of course, too. But it's always kind of an interesting cycle to think about. So we talked a little bit about styrofoam, and that to me always sticks out as like one that I just, every time I see anything that's styrofoam, I want to pull my hair out. Especially like still today, you know, if you get products that come from certain countries, sometimes they're still enclosed in styrofoam. It drives me nuts. But in addition to styrofoam, what would you say what are some other harmful materials sort of found in packaging that most restaurants use?
Yeah, I would say expanded polystyrene, or as it's commonly called, a styrofoam, but it's actually a misnomer. It's styrofoam is like a different type of product, but I call it that anyway.
Because
colloquially what, you know, we all say. Mm-hmm. So, but this expanded polystyrene is like the actual product that's used in food service packaging.
Okay.
And I would say still that is probably the most toxic packaging product that we're continuously exposed to for food service ware that's like takeout. There's other things that happen in food packaging that I studied in a previous position, you know, that like can linings, for example, are something to be aware of. But when we're talking about takeout, expanded polystyrene, because styrene is considered a probable carcinogen and, you know, it's not fully polymerized or bonded with the material. So it could possibly migrate into food, particularly hot food. So definitely maybe avoid that coffee in that styrofoam container. Yep. But I understand where places are coming from because it can be pretty cheap. Because of all the oil subsidies, it's a direct derivative of the oil production process. So when they're making the crude oil or natural gas into different products, they get styrene as a byproduct. So it's a great way for the petrochemical companies to get rid of that byproduct, is to make EPS or expanded polystyrene.
Well, there you go. So it comes back to, of course, it's always going to come back to the bottom line, but that's really interesting to know. I mean, I did know that some packaging like styrofoam, you know, was an oil byproduct, but it's really interesting to know that it's not only it's a byproduct, it's like used from waste, which obviously these oil companies would want to get rid of that waste. Another one that I was always curious about is, you see it pretty frequently in takeout where you've got like a liquid component, where you've got those kind of plastic containers. So what about plastics when we think about like clear plastic, either like clam shells or even like those thicker plastic, almost like soup containers, if you will? Time and time again, you texted, emailed, and DM'd us for our take on a planet-friendly way to purchase our tried and tested Brightly favorites. Because while the world of conscious consumerism is exploding, making mindful, planet-friendly purchases can still be a challenge.
That's where the Brightly shop comes in. To reduce some of the eco-overwhelm, every product we sell has been handpicked and vetted by the Brightly team. You won't find anything in the shop that has less than 5 stars.
We've gone through hundreds of eco products to discover new and emerging brands that solve sustainability problems for you every day. We even designed our own products like beeswax wraps to keep things fun and to help you live Brightly.
So how do we help you shop sustainably? The shop launches on the first Monday of each month and is open for 5 days. So the shorter, planet-friendly shopping window allows us to only order what we need.
After the shop closes, we pack and ship out products in bulk. This low-impact supply chain reduces waste and keeps the planet happy.
Brightly is also climate neutral certified. Because we are committed to climate action, we have set our entire carbon footprint from operations to shipping.
We believe in the power of collective change, and we are so glad you're joining us on this journey. Go to shop.brightly.eco to see what's in store.
Yeah, I always am concerned about plastics and heat. For example, you know, something you should be aware of as upcoming new mother is, you know, hand washing your plastics and not putting them in the dishwasher, because there's been studies that when heat and pressure in particular is applied to plastics, that again, the unpolymerized, so the unreacted plastic chemicals can migrate to the top of the surface and then into your food later on when you put your food in there. But, you know, that's not really typically type like the concern for food packaging, for example, or like just takeout. You know, it's probably not great to have something hot sitting in there for a long period of time, but I don't think there's any empirical studies that particularly causes migration. I think the bigger thing is like microwaving or dishwashing. But of course, you know, by using petroleum-based plastic, you're kind of buying into the whole petrochemical industry. So if that's something that you don't want to support, then that's, you know, you should probably not use plastics, because you're supporting the whole sort of food chain and everything that goes into the extraction process, from refining to creating the plastic. And every step of the way has environmental as well as social costs, particularly to these fenceline communities near these processing facilities that are making the different plastic products out of the crude oil and natural gas.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's such a good summary of why plastic, in addition to the fact that it sticks around for so long and is, you know, a huge problem from a waste perspective, I think it's really interesting to consider even before we get there, right? Like before the product's even made, the really damaging environmental and social impact that it can have. So I think that's super interesting. The other thing I'll mention, as you were talking about dishwashers, I remember growing up, I had some friends who their families were really into, I mean, it's funny, they're almost like zero waste before it was cool, but they're really into saving as many containers as they could. And I'm specifically remembering one friend whose mother would actually put those kind of plastic containers back in the dishwasher because she like wanted to reuse them. And so I think it is a good call out that you mentioned that it's probably not a good idea to put, you know, things that are not designed for like multiple use back in the dishwasher and exposing them to high heat. I think most people are generally familiar with the fact that you shouldn't be microwaving things in plastics, but I think just kind of having that reminder, in addition to just trying to avoid packaging, in plastic in general is good. And I think as we think about like what consumers can do, I think for me, of course, I do try and bring my own vessels, if you will, with me when I'm shopping, specifically bags. But when you go, have you actually ever gone to, I've never done this before. Have you ever gone to a takeout place with your own containers and asked them to put that in there? Have you ever done that before?
No. And it's weird because it seems like I would be hardcore enough to do that.
Well, this is why we have these combos, right? Like, I think we know all of this and still not do it, right?
Yeah. But it's at the same time, I'm calling ahead and getting the stuff done, you know, and, you know, it's like just trying to race around. You know how it goes.
Yeah.
And so I never have, you know, oftentimes I'll bring my own reusable bag pre-pandemic. Lately, it's still been difficult. They come already packaged in a plastic bag. So, you know, I guess it is what it is. I try to say on the phone, like, I'll bring my own bag, but it doesn't always translate or get through to the final push.
It's true. I think we all try. You know,
the best system really would be a deposit reusable system. That's kind of my vision for the future. But having this toxics background, I'm always concerned about what would that particular durable material be. For example, the plant-based bioplastic that we most often use, PLA, derived from corn, doesn't do well at high heat. But you can add, so for like our cutlery that's made from it, we add talc as a annealing agent. So that's a mineral. And yes, it's checked for asbestos, but you're not eating it anyway. That's used to like strengthen the biopolymer so that it can withstand the heat. But I'm like, I don't know how that would withstand for a lot of dishwashing. Cause if you had this deposit reusable future, you'd obviously want to wash it in a commercial dishwasher on high heat because it's going to random people. I think oftentimes what would that material be? I see other companies coming out with, you know, regular type plastic, either, number one PET or, some sort of composite, and you know that concerns me on the high heat system. And then I'm like, well, maybe metal, but then you think about the cost, upfront cost of that, and how much the deposit would be. So I still haven't figured out in my mind how like this reusable deposit system might work, but I feel like it has to. It has to be worked out because it would be just so much easier for the restaurant to have this like clean thing to put it into when I call ahead rather than making it into this huge ordeal.
Yeah. And I mean, one thing I always like to think about as an interesting parallel that exists today. And again, it's using metal. So I don't know again, how good that is, but you know, in India, there is quite a movement where people will get lunches and meals delivered to them that are home cooked, and they use these tiffin, these metal tiffin containers, and they kind of reuse them and take them back. So I often think about that too. I think about systems where we could rent things, but yeah, in terms of being the person that shows up with your own actual takeout containers, you can, but I totally agree. It sometimes can be a little bit strange. You may or may not be able to actually make sure that happens, right? Like maybe like you said, you called and you said, hey, I'll bring my own bag. Well, you might end up not getting through to the right person. So in general, one thing that I personally do is, you know, and it's easier said than done now in today's pandemic world, but I will actively try to just go into the restaurant. And then what I do, you know, so instead of going to takeout, so maybe I'll sit outside or something and I'll just kind of not use a container from that perspective, but then I will bring a glass sort of, with a lid container that I use frequently and use that to take home my leftovers. So that's the only one that I could say, listeners, that I do more or less regularly when I can. Of course, again, eating in person though, it can be pretty dicey depending on where you are right now. So, you know, we don't have any great solutions here, but I think it's interesting to kind of deconstruct the behavior. And I'm wondering too, like, so if we think about, we've really, I think, covered the packaging issue pretty extensively. And I'm wondering, like, if you were to talk to a small business owner who is, you know, potentially facing, you know, record low profits because of the pandemic, and they're struggling, and they're like, okay, I'm going to go into packaging. Would you give them any other potential levers that they could pull? Like, where else could businesses actually look to make changes elsewhere to kind of mitigate these environmental costs other than packaging? I'm curious.
You know, that's a really good question. I feel unqualified to answer.
Of course. Yeah, no, I know none of us are small business or restaurant owners, but I'm wondering, yeah, it's curious. It makes me curious.
Yeah. You know, I think a great lever to have an ordinance, for example, is that, for example, like silverware, cutlery or anything like that, napkins, that all that has to be upon request.
Okay.
And
I love
so
that.
Yep. That's a great way to, you know, most likely, especially now, people are eating at home. They're just taking that right home. So they're not like, you know, eating it outside. And if you have that plan anyway, you might as well just like bring your own metal or whatever, wood, utensils. And because you've already planned on that. And so I think that's a great thing to have an ordinance, because it really helps the restaurant save money, because they're not just giving this away blindly. People know that they can't do that. So it's not like the restaurant's being stingy. It's a local ordinance. They have to abide by it. It's a great way to be able to utilize, for example, compostable food service or foodware, like cutlery and things like that, without, which might have a slightly higher price point than your cheap petroleum-based component, and you not feel bad about it because you're not giving away as many.
Yeah, and that's another thing we can do as consumers. Like, even if there's not an ordinance, you can make sure, in addition to telling the restaurant, hey, I don't need a bag, you can also say, hey, I also don't need silverware or cutlery. And that's something where I've noticed a lot of the delivery apps now have a checkbox on there where you can say whether or not you need that, which I think is a really good positive thing that tech has done to help. But you're totally right. I think that's a great way that businesses could potentially cut down on that. And then I also, just from a silly aspect, maybe we should all just have sandwiches, things that we don't need cutlery for, right? No, just kidding. Only support hands only food. but Lauren, this has been so fascinating. And I think, you know, we could probably talk all day long about polymers and things like that, but we won't bore the listeners too much. So to kind of conclude our episode, we typically like to ask our guests a very similar question across, which would be, what really excites you personally the most about the ethical and sustainable movement right now as you see it?
Oh, that's tough to say, because I do feel a little down this week, I have to admit, with the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change latest report. So right now I would say I feel a little bleak.
We all feel like that. Yeah.
I feel pretty concerned about, you know, the conveyor belt of, you know, hot and cold water that brings the warmer temperatures to Europe, like about that slowing down. But I guess what excites me is that, you know, we're able to have this type of conversation.
Yes.
And that there are companies like WorldCentric, who's a B Corp and gives away 25% of its profits to extreme poverty and supports the compostable food service movement out there, you know, doing something. And, you know, at times like this week, I can feel a little, you know, have a little bit of an existential crisis about it in terms of, you know, how much a single consumer or a single company can make that much of a difference. But I guess in the end, we have to hold on what we can control. So I think it's great that we're having this conversation and that there's other people besides just you and me that are interested in this type of topic.
Absolutely. And I totally agree with you. The report out, just, you know, a few days ago, really at the time of this recording by the IPCC is really concerning to really anyone, who cares. I mean, it should be concerning to anyone who lives on this planet. But anyone who has any inkling of eco-friendly living or concern there is definitely reading this and feeling down. But I would say we actually just did a really interesting episode where we talked about climate anxiety with a psychologist, which was interesting. And so she had some tips on, you know, trying to kind of dig ourselves out of these holes. But I think it's important to just recognize that, you know, there are some facts that are unpleasant. And I think the more that we can read these things, internalize them, and then kind of turn around and get back to work in whatever way that we feel comfortable with is the best path forward. So, you know, we talk a lot about living with your values here at Good Together and Brightly. We talk about shopping those values, et cetera. But, you know, if you're really concerned about the environmental impact of packaging and plastics, et cetera, doing things like we talked about in this episode, such as, you know, reducing your packaging waste when you go get takeout, is just one way that you can make a small difference. And of course, as always, governments can make a lot of strides here in a positive direction too. So don't forget to pay attention to your local elections. We just had a primary here in Seattle, which is interesting. I can't remember the last time I really was active in a primary, but I certainly was here. So taking a look at who's going to be doing the city budget, stuff like that, that might not seem particularly interesting. You can really dig into people's backgrounds and understand like how they're going to approach these problems, because it might sound kind of boring, but there definitely is a downstream impact there. So as always, listeners, you can make a difference. That's why we have this podcast here. Lauren, it's been wonderful talking with you. We really appreciate having you on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me, and good luck with everything in your upcoming pregnancy.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for joining us on another episode of Good Together. As always, you can get show notes and explore lots more content related to all things eco-friendly living by checking out brightly.eco/podcast.
And don't forget to join in on the conversation that's happening on our Facebook group. Simply search Good Together Ethical Shopping and it'll come up. You can also leave us a question through voicemail. The link is on brightly.eco/podcast.
If you're into social media, give us a follow on Instagram, Facebook, and all of the channels. Our username is brightly.eco.
Finally, we want to leave you with a reminder. Every day is a chance for you to create change, and you're already covered for today since you joined us here on the podcast. Stay kind and live brightly.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
You just realized your business needed to hire someone yesterday. How can you find amazing candidates fast? Easy. Just use Indeed. Stop struggling to get your job posts seen on other job sites. With Indeed sponsored jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates, so you can reach the people you want faster. According to Indeed data, sponsored jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. Don't wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/ARTS. Just go to Indeed.com/ARTS right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need.